So there it is. Just if I could have your name, your branch and rank in the service, and then maybe just the dates that you served in first.
My name is John Baylor. I was a second lieutenant in the U.S. Army Air Force, a bombardier, and I served in the Pacific.
Okay. I wanna dive in right into the training right away. You were training different people in Andorra and training yourself. If you could walk me through a typical day at training.
Well, training, of course, in our branch of the service was extremely important. And at every phase of training, it was intensive and it required a lot of work on the part of the individual. In basic training, of course, that was standard and very, very intensive. My other training in preparation for bombardier training, I was a gunnery officer, and that involved intensive training both on the ground and in the air. And in my overseas training on B-24s, we continued our intensive training both with the bomb site and with our crews. And then I had the opportunity to train several crews going overseas actually before I went overseas.
And when you went overseas, where are the different places that you were stationed doing this training?
Well, because I did train two crews that one went to Guinea and one went to Europe, and then my third crew I went overseas with went to the Pacific. So I went to first to the Philippines, and then because the war was winding down, I ended up in occupied Japan up on Hokkaido at Chitose Army Air Base.
And what was your experience first in the Philippines in contrast to Japan? How long were you there?
Well, my experience in the Philippines, I was with the 90th Bomb Group of the 5th Air Force, and the 90th Bomb Group had been very heavily involved in the early Pacific War. I was on a replacement crew. We were stationed in temporary quarters on the island of Mindoro in preparation for what would have been the invasion of Japan had not the war ended. So we continued our training there, of course, and went through the process. And then after the war, I went up to Okinawa and Aishima, and then on into Japan for occupation training.
Mm-hmm. And the actual experience in the Philippines, were you a teacher at this point, or you're still in training yourself?
No, at that time, I was with my crew, and we were, as I say, in preparation for what was expected to have been the invasion of the mainland of Japan. But we were in temporary quarters, and at that time, I never flew a mission, although the 90th Bomb Group was still flying some missions in southern Japan. I, as an individual, or my crew, did not fly a mission.
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of planes were you training on? I want to go into some specifics about what it was like to...
Well, my early training, in gunnery training, I was on B-24s. On B-17s. And we had some special experiences there. The B-17s we were using were planes that were not considered suitable for combat or had been combat planes. And we lost a couple crews there. And overseas training, I was on B-24s as a bombardier. And, of course, my specialty was with the bomb site, the Norden bomb site. And we also had several casualties there, either due to pilot error or poor equipment. But we had extensive training, both ground training, air-to-ground training, air-to-air training, in preparation for what was to have been a major experience overseas.
And I understand these planes have some nicknames that maybe better describe them than B-17.
Well, every plane had its nickname. The B-17, of course, was considered the main plane, the main bomber used in Europe. And it was did not carry a heavy bomb load. It was very safe to fly and didn't have a great range. The B-24 Liberator bomber, which we call the flying boxcar, had a much larger bomb load. It had a longer range, but was not very stable, so you had to fly it every inch of the way. And it was used primarily in the Pacific, although the B-24 was also used extensively in the European campaign.
It starts to sound like it's be to the difference between driving a bus and, you know, driving a sports car with the B-24.
There. Well, the B-17 was a very special plane. And, of course, as I say, it was well-suited for the European battles. But it did have stability that the B-24 did not have.
Mm-hmm. And as a teacher, if we could go back to the training a little bit, you must have had some proud moments when you're graduating some of your crews and returning some successful missions.
Well, yes. Of course, early in the war, many of the crews were flying individually. And the bombardier was on his own with his crew, and of course the losses were extremely high. Later on in the war, they went to mass bombing, and my job in training, after I took my first crew through training, my job was to train the navigator on the use of the Norden bomb sight, the principles of it, so that he was familiar with it and could handle it. But by the same token, The crews were primarily used in mass bombing so that he did not have to have the knowledge of the bomb sight that the bombardier had. And it was quite an experience.
Mm-hmm. And how did it make you feel when some of those more successful missions came back and you're responsible for that knowledge?
Well, you feel very good, and you also feel sad because you know that these people were going in combat, and actually both my first crew and my second crew went down. The first crew went down in Guinea. The second crew I trained went down in Europe. So I was prepared to go overseas with my third crew to the Pacific.
Mm-hmm. Did that affect how you formed personal relationships during the war?
Well, it certainly does, because particularly in the Air Force, and particularly in a situation such as mine, we soon learn that you maintained good friendships, but not close friendships, because you didn't know whether the person you were working with today was going to be here tomorrow.
And so would that be something like a working relationship where you're social, but you're not trying to get too close?
That's right. You maintain a very close working relationship. Of course, in the Air Force on bombers, the crew consisted of 10 people, 4 officers and 6 gunners or enlisted people. And the bombardier was the gunnery officer as well as the bombardier. So certainly you maintain a very close relationship with your crew. But by the same token, you realized that you might not have the kind of relationship that you might have if you were on a ship or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And then just thinking about your experience specifically in Japan, what kinds of things were you doing on a daily basis? Was it the same bombardier training? I understand you were...
Well, understand that once the war ended, mm-hmm. and I went to occupy Japan, I was an obsolete bombardier. Mm-hmm. So I was reclassified as base utilities and engineer supply officer. And our situation in Japan, up at Chitose, which was at the base of the Aleutian Islands, was to keep the base fueled with coal and to keep the runways open with snow. And I was there throughout a winter, in which we had about 100 to 150 Japanese people working with us. And, of course, we had to use all Japanese equipment because the American equipment was not satisfactory for the heavy snowfall we were working with in that area.
And how was your experience working with those Japanese?
We had a good working relationship. Of course, the island of Hokkaido and up in that area, when we were there, of course, the Japanese people that were working with us were local people. They did not have much food. We tried to take good care of our people, develop a good relationship with them. We supplied them with rations, and we actually had a very satisfactory working relationship with the Japanese, both in the working Japanese and also at the base itself.
Mm-hmm. And talk about the conditions on the ground there. You're way up north. That's pretty cold, especially you said you survived one winter.
I survived one winter. We arrived, when I arrived in Chitose, it was snowing. When I left about 6 months later, it was snowing. I never saw the ground. We had several feet of snow, as I indicated, because of the heavy snow in that area and the low temperatures. The Japanese workers had to unload the coal cars by hand, and we had to use Japanese equipment to keep the runways open because of the heavy snow. American equipment couldn't handle it.
And did you have an opportunity to experience Japanese culture at all or interact with these locals?
We had very little opportunity to interact with the Japanese except at the Chitose Air Base, which was a Japanese naval air base. We worked very nicely with people on base and got acquainted with them and had no problems whatsoever.
And just thinking about your experience on the whole in the war, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how it changed you from when you entered the war as an 18-year-old and then a few years later, you're starting your life.
Well, I think there are two or three words that would define what the war was all about for most of us. One was sacrifice, of course. One was discipline. And I think these two words pretty much indicate how we worked and maturity. So a young man, when he went into service, first of all, he learned discipline. He grew up. And he also learned to sacrifice. And that is why I think the World War II generation was as successful as it was.
Do you think that's something that later generations are dealing with in a different way?
I think that is some way, something that current generations are dealing with in a different way. We do not have the close connection with the war at either the local or the national levels. The sacrifices that our parents made, the sacrifices that everybody made during World War II brought everybody together and was very important in succeeding to a great conclusion in the war.
What do you think has changed in that time to create this different environment?
Well, I think philosophy on the part of the people, every generation is different. We've gone through several generations where sacrifice was not as critical. We've had other problems that have faced us, and it was just a unique period.
Mm-hmm. And then how have you used those skills later on in life? How have you been involved with the military or even separate using that maturity?
Well, I left the service, I was in the inactive reserves for several years, but concluded that I could serve my needs better leaving the service. And I've been very active professionally, academically since that time. But I feel that the three points that I mentioned earlier, the fact of maturity, the fact of a sacrifice, the fact of growing up, helped me considerably throughout my life in terms of serving the public that I worked with.
I just want to go back to one point during training. We talked about earlier this week your situation or what the conditions were when you heard that the bomb was dropped. You were in class, right?
No, I wasn't in class, but we were sitting on Mindoro anxiously waiting with the expectation that we would be continuing the war and probably heading the mainland of Japan. So it was a tense period for us because we knew that had the war not ended with the bomb, the likelihood is that we would have had invasion of the mainland, and it could have resulted in very serious losses, air, sea, and on the ground. So it was a tense period for us as we prepared.
What was your first reaction when you heard the bomb was dropped?
Relief. Relief.
Could you say a little bit more about that?
Well,
why were you so relieved?
Obviously, we hated to see and hear of the tremendous losses that resulted from the bomb, dropping of the bomb. On the other hand, we recognized the lives that were going to be saved as a result of the war ending. And so there have been many concerns about it. By the same token, it was, I think, at that time, the right thing to do.
And it was a shared relief among...
I think it was a shared relief among all of us.
Your crew as well. Among your crew as well.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you could go into just a little more detail about the daily life of training. Could you walk me through a typical day? What time do you get up in the morning and what takes place here?
Well, of course, the routine for all of us was pretty well established. In training, and I'll talk about primarily overseas training now, we flew training missions of one type or another every day, either a bombing mission, air-to-ground, air-to-air, or navigation. Our missions were usually several hours. And along with it, of course, we had very intensive training in the use of the 50 caliber machine gun and preparations in case you went down in the jungle or to protect yourself. So training was just expected, of course, with the physical training to keep us in condition to survive in the event that you did have difficulties.
Tell me about that machine gun. What does that look like? How big is this thing?
Well, the 50 caliber machine gun, which was the basic machine gun, the basic gun on the B-24, and we had, six gunners, and we had flexible 50 caliber machine guns. We also had fixed guns, and it was extremely useful and powerful and important. My bomb group, the 90th bomb group, prior to the time that I joined the group, had a very excellent record in the Pacific theater of shooting down between 400 and 500 Japanese planes. And that was primarily the 50 caliber machine gun was the primary gun that was used on the heavy bomber.
Hmm. Mr. Baylor, thanks for your time this morning. I really appreciate it. Unfortunately, that's all the time we're going to have today, but appreciate you coming in.